Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Is it possible that a filing before the U.S. Supreme Court that was filed on Thursday by the Mississippi Attorney General could be the beginning of the end for the landmark abortion case Roe v. Wade? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about a brief filed by the Mississippi Attorney General to overturn Roe v. Wade and Casey v. Planned Parenthood. Joining us on this Monday afternoon, Clark Forsyth, Senior Counsel for Americans United for Life and author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade. Clark, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be with you.
What makes the Supreme Court brief filed by Mississippi Attorney General Lynn Fitch so important?
Two things. First of all, no state has asked the court to overturn Roe v. Wade since 1992. And secondly, it's a procedural kind of necessity, meaning that in cases that the court hears, the court usually doesn't reach out to overturn a prior decision. It looks to the parties to ask it to do so. And it was an important step for Mississippi to do so in this case, which then kind of sets the table for the court to address the issue.
What was the basis for the court's ruling in Roe v. Wade?
Well, to be really frank, the court's decision in Roe v. Wade was incoherent and confused and contradictory. But the I suppose the basis that most people look to, or scholars and judges look to, is the court applied or announced a right to privacy in 1973. And they simply dictated that the right of privacy is broad enough to cover abortion. But the court repudiated that in 1992 and has never mentioned privacy in the context of abortion again. So the ostensible reason has been repudiated by the court. So what is left to hold Roe versus Wade together today? That's a question the court's going to have to reconsider.
What specific argument does Fitch make regarding Mississippi's ability to regulate abortion before the court's definition of viability?
Well, basically, Mississippi forthrightly says that there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents Mississippi from protecting unborn human life, prenatal human beings at any stage of pregnancy. They're making a very textualist argument. They're saying abortion isn't mentioned in the Constitution. No right to abortion is mentioned in the Constitution. In fact, privacy isn't mentioned in the Constitution. So nothing textually prevents Mississippi or other states from protecting prenatal human life.
Essentially, Fitch is calling, well, at least the Roe court's bluff and saying the emperor has no clothes. This decision in 1973 was without any legal or constitutional basis.
Yes, they're saying nothing in the text or the history or the structure of the Constitution creates a right to abortion or prevents Mississippi from protecting prenatal human beings.
If the majority of the court agrees with Fitch's argument, what would that mean for Roe and for Casey?
I guess I kind of like to describe it as the court could take tiny steps, small steps, or big steps toward overturning Roe versus Wade. They should overturn Roe versus Wade. And if they adopt Mississippi's argument, they could overturn Roe versus Wade. I see my job in filing a brief in the court as urging and encouraging the court to do so and equipping the justices to do so.
So what would the small steps, what would the medium steps, what would the big steps look like?
Well, the big step would be doing it, overturning Roe versus Wade, because it has no basis in the Constitution. A small step would be sending the case back to the lower court judges to kind of reconsider it. a median step actually would be to say that Mississippi's law is constitutional and they can enforce it without addressing the overruling of Roe question and kind of kicking that down the road for another day. It's possible that this majority, especially since it's the first abortion case for some of the justices, it's possible that the court could cut back on Roe versus Wade without serving the death knell now and take a one or two step or three step approach to it. That would be kind of a medium step.
But I guess if not legally, logically, if the court said, yes, Fitch, you're right, there's nothing in the Constitution that keeps Mississippi from regulating abortion all the way past that line of viability, logically, they would be saying, in effect, Roe is moot, wouldn't they?
Yes. Hopefully they'll do that overtly, expressly, and clearly and absolutely, that Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey are hereby overruled. And in effect, that would then send the issue back to the states and allow the states to enforce their own laws.
How have some states already been preparing for the reversal of Roe?
Well, I think there's a big uncertainty as to what reversing Roe means. It doesn't mean that the court makes abortion illegal. It doesn't mean that some national prohibition goes into effect. It means that the issue is sent back to the states and the law that is on the books in the states can be enforced. So some states have marginal regulations on abortions. Some states may prohibit abortion after 20 weeks or after fetal viability. But about 15 or 20 states actually have a prohibition in the first trimester on the books. Some states, like Mississippi, well, or like Alabama, have a very strong prohibition at all stages of pregnancy. If the law is on the books in those states can enforce that law. So if Roe was overturned today, maybe 15 to 20 states could prohibit abortion even in the first trimester, but in 30 other states, it would be illegal up to 20 weeks or even throughout pregnancy.
And there are other states that have preemptively attempted to say, look, abortion's always going to be legal at every moment from conception through birth in this state, haven't there?
Yes, with some exceptions. They might have a life of the mother exception. Some states might have a rape or incest exception. Some states may have a mental health exception. But 15 to 20 have a first trimester prohibition that's pretty strong and might be enforceable.
Are there other laws in other states that could offer similar challenges to Roe should this law in Mississippi not bring about the court's reversal of Roe?
Yes. In fact, there are 40, at least 40 cases in the lower courts, the lower federal courts, heading to the Supreme Court. And there's kind of a traffic jam of abortion cases heading to the Supreme Court. And that's a unique situation. That hasn't been true at any time since 1973. So the court knows those cases are coming and can kind of look down the road and see them. And if it wants to, pick and choose as to which of those cases it might take in the future if it doesn't overturn Roe in the Mississippi case.
This is the first major abortion case that the court currently comprised has had an opportunity to hear. How confident are you of five or six judges, and who would those judges that might not vote to overturn Roe v. Wade be?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious based on past writings and opinions and decisions and votes they've made that Justice Sotomayor and Justice Kagan and Justice Breyer are not going to vote to overturn Roe versus Wade. The only justice on the court right now who has overtly, publicly said he favors overturning Roe is Justice Thomas. Justice Roberts, Alito, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh haven't publicly stated their position on that. and Justice Barrett hasn't faced an abortion case yet. So at the very least, this case is critical for demonstrating where Chief Justice Roberts, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, and Barrett stand on the question. So it's going to be very important to see where they come out on this.
If the court took that medium step that you mentioned before, and that is to grant the petition of Mississippi, but to say, we're not going to say anything right now about Roe specifically, if they do that, what would that mean for Roe as a precedent in future cases?
Well, I think it would weaken and make clear that Roe versus Wade is unsettled. Now, I realize that unsettling sounds like a modest kind of label, but when past decisions by the court are unsettled, they deserved, they're defective, and they deserve to be reconsidered. And the court does that each year with a number of its past decisions that are unsettled because they are defective or they're unworkable or they're controversial, and reconsiders those. And Roe and Casey are already radically unsettled. They're unsettled because of controversy. They're unsettled because they have divided the court. They're unsettled because lower court judges have criticized them and because scholars have criticized them. So right now, Roe and Casey are radically unsettled, and the court kind of doesn't have an alternative but to reconsider them because they're unworkable, and I think the justices, or at least a majority of the justices, understand that they're unsettled and they need to be reconsidered in one way or another.
You have pointed out many times, Clark, that even those who support abortion, some are willing to admit that Roe is just a terrible decision and bad law.
Yes, there have been a number of scholars that said, Mark Tushnet, a Harvard law professor, has said that as a matter of simple craft, most everybody admits that Justice Blackmun's opinion in Roe was dreadful. And a number of scholars admit that Roe and Casey are unsettled. The court's abortion doctrine is unsettled. In fact, in the fall of 2019 at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, two law professors who support Roe versus Wade said that this court will overturn Roe versus Wade. So advocates like to say that Roe and Casey are settled law, but in fact, I think the expectation today is that most people think the court's going to overturn Roe versus Wade sooner or later.
In a recent conversation with Dr. Robert George of Princeton University, Dr. George was fairly confident that a majority, 5 or 6, of the justices would overturn Roe. What are your thoughts?
Well, I can't read the minds of the justices, especially since they haven't publicly stated their feelings. But the court should overturn Roe, and they should overturn Roe in this case. And as I said, I see my job as an advocate before the court filing a brief in the case. My job is to encourage them to do so and equip them to do so. And I hope they will. It seems like expectations are increasing that the court will do so. So why not do so now?
What are you saying in your brief?
Well, I'm reiterating the position that Roe and Casey are radically unsettled because they are unworkable, because the court is so divided over the issue, because they have Roe and Casey have been so severely criticized by lower court judges, by scholars, that they don't deserve respect as precedent and should be reconsidered and overturned.
Clark Forsyth is senior counsel for Americans United for Life and author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade. You'll find a link to this book and to Americans United for Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Clark, thank you very much and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Todd, so much. It's always good to be with you.
Dr. Ken Sherb is with us on the other side. He is author of a series of sermons called The Old Testament Collection, Preaching Christ in the Old Testament During the Church Year. We're going to be continuing our weekly series with him on the Old Testament in a church year, talking again about the prophet Isaiah. If you were unable to attend this year's Making the Case conference, we have good news for you. We've produced a recording of each of the speakers' presentations, all of the worship services, and the hymn sing. You can watch an on-demand video stream, a DVD, or flash drive for a tax-deductible contribution of $300 by Labor Day. Learn more at IssuesETC.org or make your $300 check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Those words of Jesus have been the motto of Concordia University Chicago for generations. We build our education on the Word of God, the only sure foundation for learning. I'm Dr. Adam Francisco, Dean of the College of Theology, Arts, and Humanities at Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for God's Word to become the foundation of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years, LutheranPublicRadio.org.